There is one phrase that is more hideous than any other.
Picture this. Recording studios somewhere far, far away.
Say, kids, what time is it?
It's time for...
The Merry White House Experience. Thank you very much. Well, we'll be hearing more about this later in the show, but this week, the Al-Fayed brothers were accused of telling lies during the Harrods takeover. What were these lies? Well, apparently the brothers have claimed, firstly, that Manchester United didn't lose a single game between 1970 and 1972. Next, that they co-wrote All Around the World by Lisa Stansfield. And that the boy who played Pogo Patterson in Grange Hill is now president of Ecuador. I'm David Baddiel, and this is Punt and Dennis.
And now, the Merry White House Almanac predicts the future.
March 1990. Britain is on the verge of revolution. Angry, rioting mobs are storming town halls all across the country. The reason? There could only be one reason.
We don't want another Jive Bunny single.
The reason, of course, is the poll tax or community charge, an appropriate term since most of the community is currently charging into council chambers all over England.
April 1990, defiance continues. The first actual bills go out and protests increase to the point where even the media are openly defiant.
There was uproar today in the House of Commons when Mrs. Thatcher attempted to defend the controversial community charge or poll tax. And quite right too, since the whole thing is plainly a pile of shite. Can't pay, won't pay.
The Conservatives are now 29% behind Labour in the opinion polls and getting increasingly desperate. Three consecutive front page Daily Mail headlines read, Labour will tax your baby, Neil Kinnock secretly murdered cute puppies, and evil militant stamp on fluffy bunny rabbits. Kenneth Baker says, it's not the policies, it's the way the media have presented them.
May 1990. Labour are now 92% ahead in the opinion polls. Tory backbenchers panic and try and arrange for several showbiz personalities to appear in a party political broadcast to bolster Tory popularity. Jeremy Beadle, Little and Large, and Bob Monkhouse all appear. Labour now 99% ahead. Kenneth Baker says it's not the policies, it's the way the media have presented them.
June 1990, a heatwave begins. After 2 days, the country runs out of drinking water and only people with shares can wash their cars. There are now only 3 people in the whole country who say they will vote Conservative at the next election. The Sun launches its Assassinate Kinnock and Win a Satellite Dish competition. Daily Mail front page headlines read, Labour inject AIDS virus into baby food, and oh God, please vote Tory. Rioters burn down council offices across the country. Prince Charles says he approves. They were all badly designed. Margaret Thatcher starts planning her ultimate weapon and crossbreeds a Rottweiler with Cecil Parkinson. July 1990. 300 Conservative backbenchers resign. Mrs. Thatcher refuses to hold election. Kenneth Baker says it's not the policies, it's the way the media are presenting them. Inflation now 23%. Average price of a 3-bedroom house in London is 400 quid or swap for an old Ford Cortina. And there's a fifth bloody Jive Bunny single.
August 1990. Angry mob storms Downing Street, but are prevented from reaching number 10, not by police, but by Japanese tourists. Mrs. Thatcher finally declares general election. Conservatives publish election manifesto, which promises to reduce income tax, get everything right, and be better. Electorate don't fall for this, and Labour go 102% ahead in opinion polls. Thatcher begins to look for small, insignificant islands to invade.
September 1990. Britain invades itself. Army sent in, all non-poll taxpayers, lefties, subversives and Labour supporters rounded up, along with Jive Bunny. Merry White House Experience taken off air.
The Merry White House Experience.
Have we got any West Ham fans in? West Ham are keeping a little bit quiet at the moment, because they were beaten into the Littlewoods Cup final by Oldham. Which is brilliant, because Oldham are like the Clive Dunn of football. I really like Oldham at the moment because the supporters are just brilliant. Like, instead of all the sort of like normal football club chants, Oldham's chant is, "We are the boys in blue and white. We like to sing and we like to fight. So let's sing." That's brilliant. What else have we had? Oh, this week we found out that they found cannabis parties in Butlins, which is absolutely brilliant. Can you imagine waking up to, "Good morning, campers. Hi, hi." Right, hang on, here we go. I've got a few announcements, right? Did I tell you I've got a few announcements, right? Because, like, there's no egg and spoon race, right? Because I got really hungry. And ate all the spoons. But also, we've cancelled the Mr. Knobbly Knees, right? And we're having a Mr. Really Bloodshot Eyeball competition. Until then, here's another Doors record. Actually, I'll tell you what. There's just a question here. Who gives a toss who owns Harrods? Who gives a monkeys? I mean, we don't. How many people here sit down for tea and think, "Damn it, I've forgotten me pheasant and duck bollock pate. I'll have to nip out to Harrods." Also, here's a quick impression. That's anyone in Lambeth. I've got this new scheme going round, actually, which is pay your poll tax, steal in Wandsworth. Okay, you don't buy that one. What else? Actually, I was thinking, with Mandela free and the Sandinistas losing the election, oh, they only got to scrap the poll tax and I'm nearly out of T-shirts. I think the Bush and Nicaragua is really a strange relationship because the relationship's a bit like Victor Kiam and Remington. Because I was so impressed, I bought the country.
This week has seen major allegations against Arthur Scargill, the leader of the NUM, about his conduct during the miners' strike. The allegations have centred around money, with figures reaching into millions. Where did it come from, and more importantly, where did it go? The Mary Whitehouse Experience thinks it has the answer. Our trail leads directly to one man, a man known only as Guy, who for the last 10 years has been Arthur Scargill's hairdresser.
Well, I mean, it costs an awful lot of money to keep that kind of hairdo in order. I mean, you know, the hairspray costs alone amounted to well over £200,000. And to get that, I'm actually a man with very long hair who's been standing on a windy cliff sideways, look, takes at least 5 weeks blow-drying at a time, and that in itself swallowed up most of the cash from the Soviet Union.
Well, this is not to suggest, however, that Arthur Scargill was misdirecting funds. Rather, much of the money provided from all over the world came from thousands who felt sympathy towards a man who had to wear what they mistakenly thought was a wire wool wig. And others who, under no false illusion, simply felt sorry for someone who thinks he looks all right with a haircut, which if a hairdresser gave it to the elephant man would say, "You made me look terrible." Meanwhile, the newspapers continue to suggest that Arthur Scargill was involved in international diplomacy and espionage. So who were the two mysterious men he met wearing pinstripe suits and bowler hats?
So, Mr. Bingley.
Yes, Mr. Bradford?
Let me ask you something. Building societies are named after places. Halifax is a place. Woolwich is a place. Bradford is a place. But where the bloody hell is Bingley?
Look, we've had an application for a mortgage from Arthur Scargill.
Arthur Scargill? But the papers say he's the devil incarnate. Not only that, he wears a wire wool wig.
Yes, yes. But we haven't had any money coming in since the Home Pride adverts.
Right, now, the most explosive element of the allegations involves the link with Colonel Gaddafi. Now, we're hoping to speak to Colonel Gaddafi now on a live satellite link-up with Tripoli. Colonel Gaddafi, can you hear me?
Hello, David. Congratulations on the TV show.
Sorry, Colonel, this is a live satellite link-up, so could you just wait 3 seconds after my question is looking a bit lost and puzzled?
Yes, all right, David. You know, these satellite poses, you know, they remind me of when you go up to the urinal and then you relax. It's all about to happen, but then there's a 3-second delay before anything actually comes out.
Yes, especially when there's somebody standing next to you.
Yes. No. Sometimes I can't do it at all then, and I have to pretend that I was just finishing and go out still needing to go.
Yes, anyway, what do you say to these allegations, Colonel? Don't milk it, Colonel.
You die. I would like to say, I would like to state categorically that I never gave Arthur Scargill any money at all for the miners.
I see.
I was all meant for home improvements. You see, I live in a tent, and for me, home improvements means a Caligas stove, maybe a new polythene window. So all the money I had left over, I sent to Arthur Scargill.
Colonel Gaddafi, thank you very much.
But all this does ignore the basic fact that... Where are you going?
Last week, that bloke went to the toilet 15 times.
Yeah, later on we'll be doing something about funny walks, and it's about him, in fact. So watch his walk when he comes in.
Also, before he comes back, let's all hide as well.
But all this does ignore the basic fact that throughout the year-long strike, something was being covered up. And that, ladies and gentlemen, was Arthur Scargill's bald head.
Yeah, the show's had it now. It's had it.
I didn't even have a mortgage.
And now, the crime experience. This week, the Guinness trial continues. But what's it all about? This major trial is about several very wealthy businessmen allegedly artificially inflating the share price of a company in order to secure the takeover of another corporation. Exciting, huh?
Let's face it, modern crime is dull. The highly sophisticated financial world of the 1990s has finally put paid to the old-style criminals.
OK, lads, here's the plan again, right? The bank opens 9:30. Eric, you and Ricky take the doors and I'll take the counter, get it?
Yeah. What will we be, carrying?
Don't get nervous, Ricky. Don't get nervous. It's our job, but we're going to need them. We'll all be carrying multiple share applications. At 9:35, we each buy 2,000 preferential shares, right? Then it's outside into the motor. The engine will be running. We hold up until the price hits £1.50, and then we sell, right?
Successful criminals have quickly moved into popular culture. These were men who were brutal, clever, and stylish. Men like the Cray twins, Al Capone, Lester Piggott. Their success was based on their ruthlessness, their knowledge of the street, and their bold, intuitive planning of operations. Nowadays, however, major criminals are more likely to be greasy-haired, inconspicuous members of the company accounts department, wearing ill-fitting CNA suits and brown shoes, and commuting to work every day from Rickmansworth. What cuts them out for their major life of crime is the fact that they are dull enough to understand computers.
Computer fraud is a huge growth area as more and more companies become ripped off by their employees. It's hardly the stuff of romantic heroes.
Ah, Robin Hood, you have returned. Did you succeed in your struggle with the Sheriff of Nottingham?
Yes, I did, actually. The, fortunately, the Sheriff is IBM compatible, so, all I did, you see, and I think this was rather clever, I hacked into his invoicing system within the mainframe and altered his software to redirect all his profits into my poor people number two account, eh? Oh, little John.
Robin?
Could you pop down to Ryman's, get some more discs, please?
But it's not only the current spate of corporate crimes that are so dull. Even robbery of individuals has lost much of its glamour.
My lord, it is a highwayman.
Whoa.
Sir, I ask for your money, Access Visa Amex Diners Club, Connect Switch, check guarantee card, or your life.
Unfortunately, however, the law takes no account of how boring offences are when people are sentenced. As a result, our prisons are full not of safe breakers and getaway drivers, but of men convicted of far more mundane crimes.
Oh, does it, Mr. Mackay? Your first day, is it, Godbon?
That's right, Fletch.
Yeah. Well, don't worry, you'll settle down, you know. Discover who to mix with and who to avoid.
Who's that?
Case in point, Godbon, case in point. It's only Rule Plug Jackson.
What did he do?
Oh, well, you know. He had a job down Texas Home Care, didn't he? And every night, he would surreptitiously slip a rule plug into his overall pocket. After 10 years, he had accumulated rule plugs to the value of £14.23. Yeah, well, you know, the judge gave him 15 years. Mind you, old rule plug, he's very popular with the screws.
Right, well, now it's time for the punchline competition with me and Mark. This week's set-up line was, name one of the lies the Al-Fayed brothers used in their takeover bid for Harrods. And, Mark, read out the first one.
They are my brothers, they don't lie. Seamus Murphy. I thought that was a brilliant one.
I like that one. Right, name one of the lies the Al Fayed brothers used in their takeover bid for Harrods.
I spent all of Wednesday thinking up punchlines for Arthur Scargill, you bastards.
It's actually from Gilbert Blowlamp Stevenage.
Which I'm ashamed to say is my hometown.
This is actually a brilliant one. Because it's written in Arabic.
We love the Queen too. And that's from Julia Chai. Don't come to the show again. Ken Dodd is innocent. And that's from... that's from Martin, who's obviously done little else but come to the show.
Arabs, we're more English than the royal family.
I like that one because it was true.
That's the Socialist Worker Party branch down there.
We like the sentiment, comrade.
Isn't a bridging loan acceptable as collateral? And that's from Paul O'Brien, and that's not acceptable as a joke. Or a name.
Mrs. Thatcher to Al Fayed brothers, if you were a pair of English gentlemen, you'd never try to do this. Al Fayed, if you were an English lady, you wouldn't talk with your mouth full.
That's terrible.
That is really sexist, that one. I'll keep that.
The Mary Whitehouse Experience.
And now, the psychology experience. Recently, programmes like A Problem Ed sought to dispel the belief that if you have psychiatric counselling, then you must be a loony. Now, unfortunately, they have only, if anything, made things worse, because only a loony would want to confess their most intimate problems to 2 or 3 million people. Now, it always amazes me how some people appear to have no shame at all about parading their twisted desires on television.
What a lovely young lady. Well, give the old man a kiss.
Soon as well, ITV plans to serialise the Oedipus story right to its bitter end at 7:15 on Saturdays. It'll be called Blind Date. The Oedipus complex is the only concept in modern psychology which has percolated its way down to the high street, which is a shame, since it's clearly not thought through. I mean, I don't want to shag my mother. I mean, even my dad doesn't want to shag my mother. And if it was true that men want to marry their mums, then the girl who was most successful at attracting a boy wouldn't be the one who dressed best or danced best, but the one who wetted a tissue with her own spittle and cleaned round his mouth with it. If the woman in Oedipus Rex had been your mum, if she'd been called Maureen or Pauline or Mrs. Beryl Thompson, then Sophocles might have rethought the final scene.
Oh, woe, wife, mother, both, you know we have defiled every human sacrament. See how my eyes bleed, for I have stabbed them out.
Oh, yes, well, you just lie on the mat until I put some paper down.
I don't know.
The other famous psychiatric concept known by the man on the Clapham Omnibus is another mother-related idea, that we all want to return to the womb. Now, psychiatry tells us that this dominates the way we design our environment, although I can't think of many houses that look like a huge sack of amniotic fluid, except on the south coast. Also, this suggests also that those people who in later life make a living out of pointing out the defects in their surroundings must have been similarly unhappy in the womb.
Oh, my good God. Oh, my good God. Who put that umbilical cord there, huh? Cowboys, he's going to have to come out. Oh, no, I'm being starved of oxygen now. Suppose that means I'll grow up to be a builder.
The part of your life where your unrepressed desires are allowed to express themselves is supposed to be dreams. Now, presumably this means that underneath it all, I really, really want Leslie Crowther to come into my old history classroom on a pair of 16-foot high stilts and say, quick, everybody, there's just time to catch the hovercraft. It means a lot to me.
Yeah. Freud also put forward the hypothesis that... Hypothesis? I really wish I hadn't written hypothesis. I just can't say it. Freud also put forward the theory that personality... is shaped by shame attached to toilet training. Because of this, many parents praise toddlers for what they've done on the potty and actually encourage them to show off the shit they've just produced. Of course, some children retain this into adult life.
Hello, I'm Michael Checkland. Welcome to See For Yourself.
Thank you.
basically doing now is phoning a bloke called...
Martin Young, we're phoning now.
And what these people left their numbers a few weeks ago, okay? No, Martin Young's here. Is there anyone at home? Hang on a minute, hang on. Stop it. Is there anyone at home, Martin?
It's Paul, no.
Hello, Paul.
Hello, Paul Davis.
Yes.
Hello. Now, you're through to speak to the doctor. What's your problem?
Are you looking for Martin?
As you can see, we've got the Friends of Paul Davis amalgamated meeting, Paul.
So, Paul, come on, you can come out with it, mate. You can tell us what's wrong. What's wrong, Paul?
Hello, Paul, are you sulking? Because Martin's had a party he hasn't invited you to.
Right. He's gone. I think Paul's gone.
Who should we talk to now?
Number five, Simon Chu. Yeah.
Hello?
Hello, Simon Chu. This is the day-to-day challenge in Gary Davis on Radio 1. Now, the prize is a Liverpool 42 album. Are you a fan of Liverpool 42? Simon, it's Gary Davis from Radio 1 and the day-to-day challenge. The day-to-day challenge is this. Which one of these three people were never in The Who? Bruce Willis, Roger Daltrey, or Paul Davis? Paul Davis was never in The Who. Congratulations. Well done, Simon, and you've won a great prize.
Hang on, hello, you want to say something to us? Because I can't blame you.
What the hell's going on?
Well, basically, you've been visited, as the Chelsea headhunters used to say, by the Mary Whitehouse experience. Do you know what that is? Because you have written your name on a bit of paper.
Yeah.
You know what it is?
I know what it is.
You'll never come again, I should think.
I've never been, actually.
You've never been?
So, someone nominated you, or what?
I think I know who nominated me.
Sorry?
Someone nominated me, I guess.
Someone nominated you. Okay, well, look, we've got 350 people in here, Simon, and I give you my word that we won't let them out until someone owns up. Thank you, Simon, thank you.
Should we do the BBC complaints now?
Yeah. In the phone-in, we're going to phone up the BBC complaints department, right, and we're going to say, and they're going to say, what's your complaint? And we're going to say, it's this. Right, and then at that point, we want 350 people to shout out, little and large are rubbish, right, down the phone.
Down the phone.
He has to write it out every time.
Yeah, so he's going to have to print that out 120 times or whatever.
Good evening, BBC Television.
Hello, yes, could you put me through to the complaints department, please?
One moment. There are several calls waiting. I don't know if you want to hold on.
Well, how long will we have to hold? You're not going to put one of those horrible machines on that makes
it... unfortunately, the system now is that you get a recorded message to start with. At the moment, there are about seven calls waiting.
Well, can we just address the complaint to you, OK? And...
I'm afraid you can't, because I can't. I can give you a recording machine that you can record your comments.
Yeah, all right, do that.
Just a moment, then. Ring for you.
Doesn't she wonder?
Yeah.
Hello?
Thank you for calling the BBC Information Office. There is no one available at the moment to deal with your call, but if you wish to register a comment along with your name and the area you are calling from, please do so after the tone.
Okay.
Our complaint is... Recently, we've seen several new radio franchises starting and others are on the way. The emphasis is on specialist radio stations catering for minority interests. Across the country, there are new community radio networks opening up, and this week saw the start in London of Jazz FM, a new station specialising entirely in jazz. This should be interesting. Will this ethos apply right across their programming? How will Jazz FM's news bulletin sound?
Independent radio news at 8 o'clock with Louis Armstrong.
Morning. Here is the news. Nobody done gonna pay the poll tax.
And now the Jazz FM traffic news.
Well, the A3 northbound at Tolworth is very uncool this morning after some crazy cat jackknifed his truck, causing bad vibes back as far as Esher. On the trains, BR just ain't got their shit together, and the 7:35 Orpington to Charing Cross is cancelled owing to the driver mellowing out and being laid back. On the Underground, the Northern Line is strictly for squares, daddy-o. So get hep and walk. And now today's weather with Blind Grapefruit Taylor.
With light winds and scattered showers.
If jazz can have a whole radio station to itself, then why not other minority tastes in music? We could have Radio Folky, Radio Cajun, Radio Early 17th Century Madrigal, and Radio 3. Within pop itself, there's room for more specialist stations. Radio Rap, Radio Horrible American Ballad, and of course, Radio Heavy Metal.
Good morning, you're listening to Radio Heavy Metal. And here is this morning's news headlines.
Satan wants to pay my poll tax, Beelzebub's in my town hall. The devil's demons are exempt and don't pay any poll tax at all.
And just before the weather, a tedious 10-minute guitar solo.
But community and minority radio needn't stop a catering for different musical tastes.
No, that's right, Rob. Firstly, there's a definite opportunity for someone to set up a special radio station specifically for people with radio alarm clocks. Most ordinary radio stations are hopeless, since you have to be woken up by whatever happens to be on the radio at precisely 7:30.
Patton promised to stop jumping in the North Sea.
Being woken up by the news is horrible, and being woken up by Simon Mayo playing the new Jive Bunny single is even worse. What is needed is a special station, Radio Alarm, which continuously broadcasts programs designed to wake you up naturally.
I can smell burning! There's somebody moving around downstairs! If you're not ready in 5 minutes, your father won't give you a lift. This is Radio Alarm. Good morning.
There must be all sorts of minority interest groups who would benefit from having their own radio station catering for them. Radio Tramp, for example. Many such applications will be made in the next round of franchises, such as a new national network station, Radio Trainspotter.
Well, that was, of course, the sound of the 1735 to Haywards Heath passing platform 4 at East Croydon, and that was for Trevor and Gerald of Wallington, who say they'd like to say hello to anyone who knows them, which unfortunately is nobody, because they're dull wapheads in anoraks, but that's what we like here on Radio Trainspotter.
Radio Trainspotter.
Now on Radio Trainspotter, broadcasting on 103.4, but owing to transmitter failure not due until 109.2, it's 10:15, and that can only mean one thing, the departure of the Pullman to Penzance.
There are all sorts of other minority groups who might try and open up their own community radio stations.
Hello, you're tuned to the morning phone-in here on Radio Pervert. And I think we have our first caller. Ah, now that's Geoffrey from Edgware, isn't it?
Yes, I'm holding it now.
Could we go on to our next breather, please?
You've been listening to The Mary Whitehouse Experience. It was written and performed by David Baddiel, Rob Newman, Steve Punt, Hugh Dennis and Mark Thomas. The sound was by Alec Hale Munro, the producer was Armando Iannucci, and the teacher from Scarborough Technical College was Mr. R. Hood.